Yeah, good morning. It's called the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Peace on us, all cell phones. The time is 9:04 a.m. on Monday, April 24th, 2023. I'm joined here today by Co-Chairman Hoffman, Co-Chairman Stedman, Senator Bishop, Senator Keel, and Senator Merrick. Senator Bishop is away on other state business. This morning we have two bills on. We're going to be hearing Senate Bill 99 by Senator Wilkowski and Senate Bill 57 by Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, would you
brief at ease? Brief at ease. Senate Finance meeting back to order. We just had a change of protocol. Senator Bishop is here and certainly doing the state's business for his district. Senator Wilson is away on other state business. First bill up we have this morning is Senate Bill 99, Financial Literacy Education by Senator Wilkowski. Senator Wilkowski and his aide, Nick Moe, will be here. Please come on up to the desk. Identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Bill Wilkowski, State Senator representing East Anchorage. Appreciate the opportunity to appear before you. Senate Bill 99 establishes a financial literacy education program for public schools. It requires a half credit course be offered, and it's based on some statistics that we've learned over the years such as 55% of Americans have less than $1,000 in savings. Most Americans have nowhere near enough for their retirement. In fact, the median average savings for all Americans is about $60,000 for American families. It's even worse in Alaska. Alaska leads the nation in credit card debt. States around the country have recognized this problem, and you've seen 22 states enact financial literacy requirements in their schools. This bill requires, as I said, a half credit course, but after school district feedback, we made this as flexible as possible. And in fact, we've given school districts the flexibility to incorporate various components of this in different classes so that they can certainly have a specialized financial literacy course, but for some school districts that may not be the best option, and so this bill allows for them to teach it over different other classes. For example, in math, provisions might be caught. You can teach some in history, for example, and it's basic things that listed on page 2 of the bill. For example, how to make a budget, basic principles of money management, how to basically do your federal income taxes, things of that nature, how to deal with savings and retirement, basic principles of retirement accounts, things like that, which we think that all Alaskans and all Americans should know and understand, have a basic comprehension of. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your time. I have a very short PowerPoint presentation if the committee would like to see that, and I'll stop right there. Thank you.
We do have time for your PowerPoint. If you want to go ahead and do that, or do you want to do the sectional analysis first by your staffer?
Sure. For the record, Nick Moe, staff to Senator Wilkowski. So the sectional's pretty short. The first section, AS-1430, relating to public schools, adds a new section directing school districts to establish and provide a financial literacy education program. This is equivalent to a half credit for students in grade 9 through 12 that will be improved by the Department of Education and Early Development. And it provides a list of topics to be covered in the course to the maximum extent practical. Section 2 provides an applicability date of January 1st, 2026 for the first graduating class that will need to meet this requirement. And Section 3 provides for an effective date of the bill for July 1st, 2025.
Okay. Are there any questions by members of the committee or the bill sponsor or his trustee staffer? Senator Bishop.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe we have Kelly Manning on the line from the Department of Education, I just have a question for her.
Ms. Manning, are you on, ma'am?
Yes, hello, this is Kelly Manning, the Deputy Director for the Division of Education, Innovation and Education Excellence for the Department of Education.
Senator Bishop has a question for you.
Yes, I was just curious, out of the entire districts, do you have a feel for how many districts are already teaching something of this nature? I'm not opposed to the bill. I like it. I'm just curious as how many districts are already have this incorporated into curriculum.
Ms. Manning.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, is there a follow-up to that as well?
No.
No.
Yes, again, this is Kelly Manning, Deputy Director for Innovation and Education Excellence for the record. I don't have numbers currently with me, but we can definitely get that for you. We do know that there is some components of this incorporated into some math curriculum for some districts, but as to exactly how many districts have this level of financial literacy, we would have to look into that and get further information, and I can follow up and get that to you.
Follow-up, Senator Bishop?
No, if the chair approves that, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, for sure.
Yeah,
please do. Ms. Manning, I do have a question for you, and that has to do with the school districts. How is this not looked at as an unfunded mandate for a requirement of financial literacy? And maybe that's a better question for the bill sponsor, but while you're up and testifying, I thought I'd ask you since you're with the department.
Thank you for the question. Again, this is Kelly Manning for the record. I can't speak to whether or not districts would perceive this as an unfunded mandate. I know that we have included a fiscal note for what it would take for the department to put together some resources to come up with approved curriculum to meet the requirements. And then districts would have to weigh in, I think, on, you know, what the financial implications of that would be for districts.
Okay. Senator Wilkowski, would you mind answering that question, or if you checked into it to see what the views are on it?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've received, I'm not aware of opposition to the bill. We've received quite a bit of support. I know from the Anchorage School District, we've received support. I know they're already have components of this. Haines School District does this as well. There's been a large amount of support that I've heard for the bill. And we worked with the Association of School Boards to try to make this so that it's not an unfunded mandate. As mentioned, the department has a very small fiscal note, which we think actually we can get lower, which would provide the curriculum for this. There is standardized curriculum already available. You can get it on the internet. And the fact that we've allowed schools to tailor this in a way that they can incorporate it in different courses, we think will keep the cost down and not cause school districts to expend a lot to implement this.
Sure. Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Chair. Hi, Senator Wilkowski. Good morning. Do you imagine math teachers will be teaching this course?
Senator Wilkowski.
Through the Chair, Senator Merrick. I think different school districts will do it differently. I think some school districts may choose to have a financial literacy class, one specific class where all these things are taught. Others, school districts may have applied mathematics, for example, where certain components could be taught. That's why we wrote it in a way that's flexible to give school districts the flexibility to do this. But we just think these are important concepts to be taught. You could teach components of it, quite frankly, probably in a history class, in a science class, certainly in a math class. But we're giving the discretion to the school districts. We just think it's important for kids to graduate and know basic fundamentals of, you know, how do you make a budget? How do you apply for scholarships? Things of that nature.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. If there's no further questions, my members of the committee will go. You want to go ahead with the presentation?
All right. Nick Moe in Senator Wilkowski's office. All right, what is financial literacy? It's understanding how much you earn and spend, you know, how to repay and avoid debt, ways to build assets and achieve personal goals. And, you know, as a main goal of this is to achieve financial security later in life. Why do we need it? Only a third of Americans can comfortably afford a $400 emergency. The credit card debt in Alaska is, on average, is $8,000. And to put that number in context, that's about $1,000 more than the next state, which is Vermont. So we lead the nation in credit card debt. The average student loan debt in Alaska is $34,000, which is about middle of the pack, but substantial. And then we received an F rating for financial literacy education from a national report card that looks at financial literacy programs across the country. Another important thing to mention here, too, is that Alaska is the worst at FAFSA completion for post-secondary education. And that really, I think, puts a barrier to getting, you know, pursuing, you know, college and trade schools. That's one of the first steps, and that's why scholarships and loan applications are listed as a subject matter in this as well. So Senate Bill 99, as you heard, it adds 0.5 credit in financial literacy, and it also allows the flexibility to spread that over multiple courses. And these topics, as mentioned, include making a budget, avoiding fraud and financial deceptions, some of the basic principles of retirement, and as I mentioned, FAFSA and post-secondary scholarships. So the committee substitute in Senate Education Committee just made a few changes after discussions with stakeholders, as Senator Wilikowski mentioned. Flexibility was added, so it's not just a 0.5 credit course, that it can be spread out over several curriculum. And it added a additional relevant content. We've received some broad support from lots of different stakeholders, including parents, teachers, students, school administrators, and school board members. And available for any questions.
Do we have any questions from members of the committee for the bill sponsor or staff? If not, we'll go to public testimony. Anybody in the room that wants to go ahead and testify to this bill? If not, do we have anybody online that wants to testify to this bill? Nobody's online and nobody's in the room, so we'll close public testimony. We'll go ahead and set this bill aside. And
I have a comment.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Senator Bishop.
I would just like to thank the bill's sponsor, for Senator Wilikowski, for bringing this bill forward. I just sent my colleague to my left a note saying I had this same type of a class in my senior year of high school in Fairbanks, in Econ 1. And it was a whole quarter on financial literacy, and it was very good. And I still remember some of the main tenets of what I learned in that class somewhat 48 years ago.
Sure.
So thank you again.
It certainly is concerning that we have got the largest amount of credit card debt here in Alaska, and so little in savings for emergencies that come on up. With that, thank you very much for presenting the bill this morning. We'll set this bill aside. Next, we have Senate Bill 67, PFAS in the firefighting fund, by Senator Keel. First hearing was on April 12th. We took public testimony. Senator Keel, would you like to go ahead and give us a quick rundown on this bill?
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you. Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jesse Keel, Senator for District B. Senate Bill 67 is fundamentally a no new spills bill for PFAS chemicals, which are primarily used in firefighting here in Alaska. They have some other uses in other places, and they are toxic in extremely low concentrations. Senate Bill 67 forbids the use of PFAS chemicals from its effective date. There is a delayed implementation for the oil and gas industry. Once there are fluorine-free firefighting materials that will do the job and meet U.S. standards for the oil and gas industry, the state fire marshal will implement that transition by regulation. The other important part of the bill is a take-back of up to 40 gallons per person. We believe that the primary, maybe the sole beneficiary of that will be very small volunteer fire departments, especially in rural areas of the state, who received Code Red carts funded in partnership of the state, nonprofits, and those, among other firefighting equipment, did contain some PFAS concentrates. So the state would take those back and arrange for them to be disposed along with the roughly 30 or 35,000 gallons that the state of Alaska already owns and will have to dispose of at our many airports around the state.
Any other questions by members of the committee for this bill sponsor? Ms. Schlingheim, you want to go ahead and add to that something that have been covered, since you know so much more about the bill than the rest of us do?
For the record, Kathy Schlingheim, staff to Senator Keel. And no, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just appreciate the committee hearing the bill.
Okay. Senator Keel, how many rural airports are actually involved with this that have got these toxic fire retardant chemicals on the property?
Mr. Chairman, the FAA requires, I'll oversimplify, the FAA has long required if you can land a jet at an airport, it's got to have the PFAS foams. That is in the process of changing now because there are military specifications for fluorine-free foams, and there are many commercially available fluorine-free foams that are proving up that they meet that mil-spec. Our very smallest rural airports don't meet that standard. They have not been required to have PFAS foams. However, those Code Red cards did contain PFAS foams, and you will see DOT prepared a remarkably thorough fiscal note, which I appreciate very much. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if it's 132 or 136 locations, but they are listed out by community there in that fiscal note backup. And so the committee members can see every location we think will be taken back from those Code Red cards.
Sure. One other further question has to do with, have there been any litigation over the fire retardant issue out especially in rural Alaska?
Mr. Chairman, the state of Alaska is suing quite a few manufacturers of PFAS foams. The state's position in those lawsuits is that they knew about the toxicity of this stuff long before they told everyone else. I'm sure there's more to the lawsuits, but that's a summation. This stuff is incredibly difficult to clean up. And so where it has been sprayed, if anybody gets their drinking water down gradient, there will be pollution, and it will be, unfortunately, extremely expensive.
And just remind us of some of the toxic outcomes that have happened when PFAS has not been adequately cleaned up. Are they carcinogenic? Are there other type of maladies that are out there? What specific does the toxicity cause?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to ask Ms. Schlingheim to catch the ones I don't have from memory, but the primary ones that weigh on my mind are significant fetal effects for pregnant women, low birth weight, and other fetal impacts. Reduced immune function, including rendering some vaccines significantly less effective. Tremendous kidney and liver difficulties. There are also cancers, and I'm going to turn to my staff to remind me which cancers PFAS pollution is associated with.
Again, Kathy Schlingheit for the record. Mr. Chair, it's associated with liver and kidney cancers, and it's more loosely associated with some other cancers as well, including thyroid cancer.
So it doesn't have the significant stigma that something like asbestos has with mesothelium?
Mr. Chairman, I am not aware of an association with mesothelioma or other lung effects.
No, I wasn't talking about that specific. I was just saying that we all know what asbestos caused back in the 30s, and we saw the effect Many people have seen the effect from their ancestors or grandpa and grandma that were in the war effort. And so I just was wondering if there was anything specific like it, but it doesn't sound like it is necessarily.
Mr. Chair, Kathy Schlinghide for the record. The scientists are still trying to figure out what mechanism exactly is causing health effects with PFAS, and it is not associated with just one thing. It causes system-wide disruptions throughout the body that they have shown both in lab studies with rats who've met unfortunate ends and also in looking at population studies, right, places that have had significant PFAS contamination, but they still don't know why it makes us sick, what exactly it's doing in our body. So it doesn't have that same understanding of the connection yet.
Sure. Well, thank you very much. Andy Mills with DOT is online for questions. Are you on, Mr. Mills?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am here.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Mills or the sponsor of the bill by members of the committee? If not, Mr. Mills, I guess one of the questions I do have is that is the department in favor of this legislation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to answer that question. Andy Mills was legislative liaison and special assistant at the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities for that record. Certainly we, in conducting the research on the code, Project Code Red, do see that there's an issue with these substances in rural areas that don't currently have a plan. And there's actually conversations with the Office of Rural Fire Protection. Many of these 132, you were correct, sites that we have on this Project Code Red list, that firefighting equipment is no longer certified as usable. It would not be considered to be up to date and available for firefighting efforts, is our understanding. And therefore, that AFFF containing substance is out there, presenting essentially just an issue. And so, correct that DOT does have significant stores of AFFF containing PFAS at our airports. Did want to note that this doesn't necessarily take care of rural airports. That's sort of a different matter that was not in the analysis of this. It was targeted at the Project Code Red sites, which isn't, to my understanding, airport specific. That would be different. And the language, as we stated earlier, is broad enough that anyone with AFFF that wanted to dispose of up to 40 gallons annually would be coming to the department. It would essentially be a first come, first serve basis.
Mr. Mills, as you look at some of the airports, is it fair to say that all Part 139 airports that are certified have got a PFAS problem?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that is a fair way to characterize that. All those Part 139 certified airports do have a requirement to keep that on hand for firefighting purposes. And, of course, training has been conducted in the past, and I believe the Department of Environmental Conservation has a map. I believe we supplied it per Senator Hoffman's request last year in committee as well, and could reprise that again. I'm sure it's being added to as sites are being tested and characterized, but that is correct. Those airports do have PFAS that was put onto the ground and has either washed into tables or saturated the soils and are contaminated sites.
One of the other questions I have for you is how many 139 certified airports do we have in Alaska?
Mr. Chairman, I wish I, of course, had brought Deputy Commissioner Binder along with me. I know for state airports, it's in the 230-240 range or somewhere thereabouts. I can get you the exact number if you'd like. And that we have certainly tested a significant number of those airports where we essentially know that there is contamination we need to characterize. And I believe this winter we were working to get the top portions of that list taken care of as far as understanding the scope of that issue and providing supplemental water to those areas where it was deemed necessary to ensure that folks were not drinking water contaminated with PFAS above the level that was certified at the time.
One of the questions that I do have is that PFAS is obviously a very effective fire retardant, if not an extinguisher. But the people that are affected most by it, as you look at some of the aircraft accidents, people are many times die from a fire, and they die horrendous deaths from either smoke inhalation or downright burning. Has there been any feedback by people in industry, the 121 or the part 121 or part 135 carriers, have they weighed in on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe I've heard anything on that front. We did, in the course of our investigation into the Project Code Red, which DOT did not have former ties to, we did find articles that talked about the Project Code Red being deployed to certain villages. And I want to say that one village that was interviewed did talk about, the added capability. They noticed the substantial difference using AFFF when fighting fires, but they put it out quickly as opposed to previous efforts where they would haul buckets of water and such. So this was before the hazard of that PFAS-containing AFFF was fully understood, but they certainly saw the difference that it made in its effectiveness in fighting fires. The question is, what alternatives exist to both keep that capacity for firefighting and not present this hazard in these communities?
So if I'm hearing you correct, Mr. Mills, you're saying that the aircraft owners and people that operate out in, especially in rural Alaska, which is the only way to get it out of some of the communities, nobody's been resistant to this legislation?
Mr. Chairman, we have not solicited any comments, but I also have not heard any.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mills, for coming out this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Keel, I guess, have you heard anything from industry, the aircraft operators, the air taxi people, and some of the airlines as to whether they are opposed to this bill at all?
Mr. Chairman, we have not heard any objections from professionals in the aviation industry. The fluorine-free alternative foams that have been in use elsewhere around the world for many years now are highly effective. Foams that meet the U.S. Navy's new military specification will save lives every bit as effectively as the toxic fluorinated foams.
And are those chemical, the new generation that's coming on, are those affordable?
Mr. Chairman, they are generally, depending on the product that is used, and there are several out there commercially available, they range from a wash on price to approximately net an increase of about 15%. generally speaking, they cost a little bit more, or excuse me, about the same per unit. some of them require higher volume to be sprayed, so different equipment will discharge the volumes needed in the same time frames.
I'm assuming they're a lot less toxic as well.
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's our understanding. Because these fluorine-free foams were, by and large, developed in Northern Europe, they were subject to very different regulatory environments where oftentimes a showing of safety is required before a product can be put into use.
Okay. We asked for amendments. None were received to my office. Do we have any additional comments by members of the committee on this bill? Do we have a motion for this bill?
If I may.
You would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee report CS for Senate Bill number 67 Resources, Work Order 33 LS0148/S, as in Skagway, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Without objection, this Senate Bill 67, the PFAS on firefighting foams, is moved from committee. This concludes this morning's agenda. Our next meeting will be tomorrow afternoon, Tuesday, the 25th at 1:30 p.m. We'll be hearing Senate Bill 41, the capital budget, with the introduction of the new committee substitute from Senator Hoffman. If not, if that's everything that comes before the committee today, I'm sorry, be at ease. call the Senate Finance meeting, Committee meeting back to order and make it clear that nothing's on the schedule for this afternoon or tomorrow morning. Things could change. And so, our next definite schedule meeting is tomorrow afternoon, Tuesday the 25th. So we're tentatively don't have anything on the schedule.
We have three things.
At ease. Call the Senate Finance Committee meeting back to order. We'll be hearing Senate Bill 41, the capital budget, as I said before, with the introduction of a new committee substitute by Senator Hoffman tomorrow. Since there's no other business coming before the committee, we're adjourned at 9:35 a.m.